Hello， 各位听众朋友，大家好，欢迎来到月不落看戏。月不落看戏是一个由横跨三大洲五个时区的戏剧实践者共同制作的文化艺术类播客。在这里，我们聚焦各地好戏，关注剧场议题。我们拒绝盲目共识，鼓励意见分歧。我们希望观点的交锋能让更多人走进剧场。在不同的时空，月亮出生的时候，我们剧场见。
大家好，我是虾米，欢迎收听本期月不落看戏，也就是我们 The Burn City 系列的第二期。去年12月的时候呢，我采访了几位 The Burn City 的表演者， Miranda McLaughlin、 Timothy Bartlett 和 Melton Lopez， 然后问了一些观众朋友们以及我自己想知道的问题。这是我们第一次尝试全英文的播客，希望大家喜欢。中文的文字版可以在下面链接里我个人公众号里面阅读，也欢迎收听我们的第三期相关节目，是嘉宾听采访随时按暂停，然后添加注解和吐槽。Hi everyone, welcome to the part two of my Burn City podcast series. So last December, I got an opportunity to interview several performers from the Burn City. They are Miranda McLaughlin, Timothy Bartlett, and Melton Lopez. Then I asked them some questions we're all interested in. Since this is the first English episode our podcast has ever had, please find the Chinese version of the contest in the link below. So now let's listen to what they thought, their experience in the past year, and what interesting things happened during the show. I think it's a good opportunity to talk to you and to see how things work behind. First, could you please introduce yourself and what characters you play in the Burn City?
Hello, I'm Miranda McLaughlin. I currently am playing Polyxena and Watchmen in the Burn City, but I'm in contract two. I'm doing quite a few more characters. And I've already done Eurydice, which is exciting. There's other things coming up.
We'll see in 1 month. Well, I miss the Eurydice show, but I'm looking forward to more. That's great. What was your journey with Punch Drunk? Also, I heard you have performed in Sleep No More Shanghai before. What's the difference you feel between Sleep No More and the Burn City here? How about the audience?
I've been working with Punch Drunk since 2010. Yeah, so I graduated and I got thrown into the Dutch Amalfi. Yeah, on and off for the last 12 years, I've been in productions with them. So I've kind of grown up in the world of immersive theatre and I love it. I find it hard to do any other kind of performing now because I love to be this close to the audience and feel their reactions so viscerally and immediately. I find when you do proscenium arch, they're just that little bit further away. You can feel them, but you can't quite. And then you do TV and then you don't feel their reactions at all for months later. And back to the question, which was, yes, I did do Sleep No More Shanghai. I was first contract. I came out and restaged, did the creation and restaged Sleep No More, which was great fun. Mad culture shock for me. All the rules I thought I knew about maneuvering audience kind of went out the window because I found the audience in Shanghai watched a lot closer than what I was used to, which was really interesting. The English are very much like if you touch them, they jump and run a mile.
Yeah, like on the tube.
yeah, which is also very different. We adjusted and then it was great. The commitment of the audience and the attention to detail was amazing. I guess that's the biggest difference I felt. And also I feel like, I mean, generally people on both sides of the continent, they get as committed to the shows as we are. And it's nice how the audience kind of build it with us in a way. And I found that on both, like, everywhere. the more detail we put in, the more detail people read into it. And it's a cycle, just like the loop structure is ever evolving and growing.
And when did you get involved in the Brand City project?
I've been kind of right from the get-go. They've been pulling me in from like the first publicity photos where we're falling in that dust, in the ash, which is actually made out of corn flour, and we're choking on a lot of it. I'm glad we're using less of that in the show than we originally thought we would.
I know the show has evolved significantly since the preview, obviously from your first day of rehearsal and research process to the current state. So where do you normally gain the idea from for the development?
In the research and development, when we were in Wayne McGregor Dance Studios, which was colossally different to being in the building here, because that's a very abstract white box as a starting point. It means you're not influenced by anything to begin with, but also felt like we were kind of exhibits on show in this white box creating, which I guess is quite relevant to the kind of museum start of the show. And then we made it into the building. And yeah, things grow.
I really like the old museum entrance that lead audiences into.
Well, like I said, it's never, this show will never be finished. No Punch Drunk show will ever be finished. It's a living, breathing organism that grows. And when the show was birthed, it really was birthed as a baby. And then it went into its infancy. And I think it's actually, it's learning to walk still. and we're growing with it. And as the performers change, it also grows and develops. And you bring, I mean, Max and Felix never dictate. It's not a dictatorship. They never line read or tell us exactly what to do. They give you the beats. And as long as you're playing the narrative with those beats, there's so much detail and texture that you can add as a performer. And you can watch the same character being played by five different people and glean a huge amount of different information by each of their performances.
So you need to do your own improv into the characters.
Because on this show, we've got an army since COVID. Things are different. We need a lot more swings than ever before to keep it running. So you're not constantly getting used to performing with a certain cast of people. We've had to be much more fluid and ready to perform with anyone, whether they've done one show or they've done 100 shows in this character. And it makes you have to stay really open. I mean, there is a lot of improv involved, but it's very structured. Maxine would die if she heard me say there's improv in the show. Like, there is... I mean, everything is very thought through and in depth and structured, but there has to be because of the amount of different variables that can happen and the different performers jumping in left, right and centre. There has to be an element of, being able to react to these things in the situation. Therefore, like, even one show is never the same as another. Also, one loop is never the same as the next. I mean, a lot is the same, but there is also... yeah, many differences.
Yeah, I can see every loop is unique. You miss one, you miss it forever.
Yeah. I mean, fun things that happen that can be, that end up being magical. For instance, someone gets injured and goes down. Oh. I was playing Watchmen the other day and Patroclus had to leave the show because they weren't well. And Watchmen finally got promotion and helped Neil Ptolemus do the training fight scene at the beginning.
That's a big progress for the Watchmen.
Which is magic, which also meant that Polydorus ended up having to switch to being Patroclus at some point. So he finally became a soldier. And then Hecuba, his mother, was confronted with her own son, who's no longer her son, at Fall of Troy. I mean, and these things are just... if you are a repeat viewer of the show, it's very exciting to watch these things as much as they are for the performers to handle and deal with these things. I mean, in the same night, I think Cassandra had to do a couple of scenes that she did with Apollo without an Apollo, but then she all I've heard are about these incredible solos that Elin just pulled out of the bag. And that's just hats off to all of the cast for how quickly they can think on their feet and how much they care about keeping the show going. I mean, the first fire alarm we had, no one wanted to stop. Everyone kept going. And we had to be forced to stop. So there's a lot of love in the work.
Yeah, I'm impressed by how professional all you are. So my next question is, although I know all the women in the show, like you mentioned, Cassandra, Polisina, they are all portrayed as resilient, but they are still sacrificed. And do you feel there's a particular meaning underlying this contrast, or would you say this is somehow still parallel to the situation of the women today?
As Polisina, I feel very empowered as a female. And you say she still gets sacrificed, but in my opinion, she chooses to be sacrificed, and she takes over that situation, and it empowers her. And in Greek mythology, we studied, there are several rungs of the underworld. And in her mind, by dying in this glorious way, which is something called kleos, she is dying a royal and regal, proud death. And there is no better way that she could go out. So yeah, I feel very empowered. And decisions like, I choose to look at my mother when I take off my dress, because I don't want that to be sexualized in any way. It's a moment of, I'm proud to do what she's trained me to do and become the martyr in this situation. Yeah, we think very carefully and constantly discuss and are always open to hearing how people view things.
Mm-hmm. That's a really amazing answer.
Also, I find there are several roles that have gender fluid casting. For example, the watchman you played. Does gender blind casting give performers more perspective, apart from the simple idea of female perform male characters?
I think this gender fluidity in many of the characters in this show, for instance, I play Watchmen and I switch, has been a fascinating process for me, and the first show I've ever worked on that has been this fluid with characters. It's made me realise things that I hadn't realised. For instance, with Watchmen, I had to have words with fellow performers about the way they would interact with me. For instance, sometimes they'd touch my face and I'd be like, that's not appropriate. Don't touch my face. It suddenly makes the scene romantic because of who we are. And this is not a romantic scene. And I don't want to feel like that. Or for instance, I'd put a hand on someone's shoulder and I'd realize, am I mimicking a male gesture, or am I just doing something like I would? To bring honesty to our characters, I think you have to draw from a lot of your own self.
Yeah.
And I think for me to mimic a man would feel not honest. So I chose personally to research military females. And I watched a lot of footage of female police officers to try and understand the way they would hold themselves and stand and be in environments where they were quite often outnumbered by men. And an understanding and not a stereotype of a woman in this character. And that's the way that I chose to play it. Many other people may feel differently about the way. It's interesting where some things are appropriate and some things aren't. For instance, I like to stand guard over Polixena's naked body when she's being redressed as Watchmen. But I don't think it's appropriate that many male people playing this character do this. Many of these things are up for debate, and I think it's important that the show is raising these points.
Yeah, I really like the gender blue casting. It's bringing a lot of new stuff to the show.
It's exciting.
It's also for the audience. Mm-hmm. With regard to age and gender, like we already discussed the gender, what other roles in the Burn City would you like to perform?
Like I said, I was very excited in the show where I had to jump into Patroclus the other day because someone went down as injury. But that's a fight I have to keep fighting. I know. I mean, I would love to do anything in the show. Well, I think we all would. And after, what, 12 years of being in the company, anything they throw at me, I'd like to tackle, to be honest. I mean, and the roles that I have coming up, I'm very excited about doing. Mm-hmm. Once I've done those, who knows?
At that point, you pretty much will cover all the roles in the Burn City.
That way, maybe one day. Yeah, I mean, kind of after you've got more than 7, I think it becomes easier to add more, but hopefully that won't, or people's brains might explode. So I think one thing at a time. We'll see what next year brings.
Yeah,
I long may it continue, and I get the chance to play more roles. Yeah.
Great. Bye. Thank you. Hopefully, we'll see you in the show.
Are you doing it in English or in Mandarin?
Both, maybe.
If it was in Mandarin, I wouldn't understand. You could probably write anything.
Yeah. And first, could you please introduce yourself and what characters you play in the Burn City?
Yeah. My name's Timothy Bartlett. I'm a swing and I perform Neoptolemus, Patroclus, Aegisthus, Polydorus, Ascalaphus, Zagreus, someone else, Lacoon. Yeah, there we go. I got there in the end.
That's amazing. Yeah, and the show has evolved significantly since the preview. What was the process like for you, like from the first day of rehearsal to the current state? So since you have so many characters, where did you gain the ideas for your character development?
I mean, it's a constant evolution from day one, and it really starts to progress once we start performing. And it's kind of through trial and error with whilst you're doing shows, you know, like you get better at the shows and new ideas come to you as you perform, and everything gets more detailed the more you do it.
And also, for example, like you must have read the original text of Agamemnon and Hecuba.
Yeah.
Do you gain ideas from your real life experience?
I mean, we started with Agamemnon and Hecuba, but there's also lots of characters which are not in those plays. And they're really useful for the main story arc. But then you also have to flesh it out with individual type of person, or who are they? What makes them an actual person? You see the decisions and the main driving forces of the characters. And then you have to kind of actualize that. And that can take various forms and various abstractions of it to create a believable character in a way. And those kind of things, a lot of those things are very small, nuanced details, or they might not come across. But I think this is what we're trying for in general, is to find these very rich, detailed moments that can be small gestures, small looks, as long as having these are large, more choreographic elements. And there we started, then fleshing them out with these really small, subtle things, which tell a story to an audience who's kind of watching. Those things really just, you grow into them in a way. And it's like, when this happens, it looks like this, and it looks slightly better if you're positioned this way. And it's really just a conversation with people who watch and people who do it and who also do your role and things like this. It's kind of like an ongoing conversation about what we want as individual artists in the company and what the company wants as to be.
Yeah, it's a really rich and complex system.
Yeah, and everyone has their own unique talents and strengths in a way. And I think Punchdrunk really is open to that and allowing of that. It's always a real balance between how individual we can all go and how what the core things we need to stick to keep it going along. Yeah, this is.
Yeah, and also as some of your characters are involved in women's sacrifice, which is the main theme of this show. And what do you feel like from a male perspective for that?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think this show is all about the women. It's all about Hecuba and Clytemnestra. And I feel like the women are all empowered. Like, apart from Iphigenia, who kind of gets sacrificed by her father, which is a bit horrific. Polyxena is the one who wants to be, who doesn't, she doesn't obviously want to be sacrificed, but she is the one who kind of steps up to that. Mm. So she has control of that scene in a way. She's kind of being sacrificed, but she has control of how it's done in a way. So she still has the power. But for, as a male perspective, I don't really know. And
I think from the original text, Iphigenia knows that her father wants to sacrifice her, and she still goes for it.
I think we're playing it that she doesn't know.
Yeah, I can see.
That's our take on it. So she arrives, and she is willing, she gets married, and she doesn't realize until Neoptolemus leaves and turns around.
This version is more tragic.
Yeah, and then that gives the driving force to Clytemnestra, and the her story goes on with Aegisthus, and then they plot to kill this man.
Do you think there's any similarities between those Greek and Troy women to the women nowadays?
I think they're both portraying different versions of a mother. Hecuba has lots of children around her, and she's always looking after her children in a way and with them. And I feel like Clytemnestra in our play only has one child, but is kind of more distanced. But still, they're both connected by being mothers. And they're both kind of connected in their grief about the loss of their children. But they're also different mothers, or different kind of parenting styles in a way, which I think is really interesting and nice to see. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you. And since as you are a swing, you play several roles. So what's the feeling of every day coming in to know that you are going to play different characters?
It's interesting. I find that really exciting, knowing, not knowing. Sometimes you do know, because sometimes people are on holiday, or
okay,
maybe you know someone's going to be off, so you know what you're going to do. In a way, you don't ever get bored with, I never get bored with what I'm doing. But what is also frustrating is that sometimes I do worse shows than I would like to, because I feel less prepared than I should be. Oh. But it's not that I'm less prepared than I should be. It's just sometimes it's like, and this is really my perspective. It's not necessarily an audience perspective at all. But I can think I've done a really good show of something, of a character, say, and then not get to perform the character for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, oh, and then do the show again, be really frustrated because it didn't feel as good as that other time I did it. Or some of the things weren't as smooth, like the timing wasn't quite right, or I messed this bit up for some reason. That can be frustrating.
Yeah. It's a huge gap between when you are playing the same role.
Yeah, it can be. Mm. Yeah. But then I said, if I only did two roles, I think I'm not sure I would enjoy that more.
Mm. So I guess you need to improvise a lot for your roles. And that makes everything like more challenging. And for you, does improvising help to keep the same track fresh, like, for the same character?
I'm not sure it does, actually, because I'm not trying to do different things every time.
Mm.
Unless that I have a new idea and I want to try something out. I think now I've probably done a lot of improv in the bits, and there's bits which I've been like, this really doesn't work, this doesn't work. So I'm kind of more aiming for the bits that do work, and it's a bit frustrating when they don't. You could class it as improv because it's not necessarily exactly the same physical material, but it depends how you describe the physical material. If you're describing it like my left arm goes up and then it goes to the side on this, or it could also be my right arm and I'm still doing the same thing. But that choice doesn't matter, but you focus on the choices which do matter, and it's not necessarily about the exact shape of it. Physical shape, though I'm not improvising in the fact I'm looking for a certain energy or a certain quality or a certain intention, or trying to find a focus or a direction of something that's usually quite similar.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned physical materials, is it more like a contemporary choreography or more like acting?
Yeah, those are also two other things. I'm not really an actor, so I don't think in terms of acting so much, unless I'm doing a role like Zagreus. There's not so many dancing stuff in there. And then you kind of have to think more in communicating a story. like, it depends on the character, how I think about it. But I find acting difficult because I don't have such a training in it. And I kind of reduce it down to physical things, like where you look, how long you look at something for.
But you have done a good job. So how flexible is it for the performance? Yeah, look, I mean, you mentioned there's huge scene that there's many characters involved, and there's also a lot of solo art. You can decide it yourself.
Each character is different. Some are very inflexible. Traveler characters are not really flexible. By this, I mean you really have a clear pathway. You have to be in this space at this space and this time. And usually the choreography is really clear. And in some ways, that's really easy to do because you know what you're doing. You go in there, you do it. It's good. You do it well. That's easy. Some resident characters are much more flexible because they have some responsibilities. They have certain things they have to do. They have to support the story, and they have to support the world, and they have to support the traveler characters who are really holding the story going along. So you have some resets of stuff which you have to get done, which is important. So you have to put this there, do that, blah, 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 make sure that works for that person. But then a lot of the other things are durational scenes, which can be quite individual. There's a lot of leeway. Like, some characters are more flexible than others. If you watch different people do different characters,
yes, I did.
You will see
very different,
wildly different things, because that's to do with the flexibility of that character. But then if you watch Agamemnon's, they will be in the same place at the same time. They might perform it differently, but it's really, that's their take on it, but it's not massively different. If you watch Lacoon's, you'll have people in different things. And this show kind of supports that quite well. It's evolving. And as people do things, they find different things. And some of the things they find are better than the things we had. So then it's like, well, this is a better version.
Mm-hmm. And what's the most challenging thing for you?
Neoptolemus in the club. You know, when he's like, ah, and then he does this scream at the end. I think that's pretty hard.
Quite physical and emotional.
Yeah.
And then what's the most unforgettable moment? Pick another one.
Unforgettable moment. Yeah. Oh, Miz, the thing that comes to my head are when, like, mistakes happen. Like,
that's also fine.
But they're just funny. The other day, I had to change from Polydorus to go into Patroclus. And then I entered Fall of Troy. And it was a bit like Polydorus had run away to join the army. That was quite funny.
Yeah, Miranda also mentioned it in the morning. That's the last question, a quick one. So without regret to age and gender, what other roles in the Burn City would you like to perform? I know you have already done a lot.
Yeah, I should have an answer to this. I've thought about this before. There's a few. So regardless of age and gender, I want to do Orpheus because I'm a really bad singer. So I think that would be really funny.
Okay.
It would be awful if I did Orpheus, but I would love. No, don't say that. Let's say Apollo. I'll do Apollo. That would be nice.
Why didn't you do Apollo?
I've already got a load of Apollos. Wouldn't mind doing Agamemnon at some point, but I think I couldn't, a bit too young now.
Good choice.
Campe or Luba would be fun.
Thank you very much for today.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, Robert. Yeah, good. How about you?
I'm good.
I guess you are busy with the rehearsal for the new cast change.
Yeah, we are.
I'll start with the first question. Could you please introduce yourself and what characters you play in the Burn City?
My name is Milton Lopez, and I play Zagreus, Kronos, and the Watchman.
Thank you. How does it feel, the role change from an audience of Punch-Drunk production to a performer of it? Have you done immersive theater before?
Yeah, I saw The Drowned Man like almost 10 years ago. Yeah, so I think I saw the last performance because I was touring with another play, and someone that was with me in that tour said, oh, you have to check this company, you have to check this work. And he explained me more and less. So I went to see it and I was just like, yeah, I was really gobsmacked. I was a big fan of a company called Fuera del Baos, which is a Spanish company that they do immersive theater as well. And they started in the 80s. Every time they went to Portugal, I was going to see their shows. And I had the opportunity to work with them because they do everything. They do immersive theater, they do outdoors, they do operas, they do everything. I had an opportunity to work in a show, in an outdoor show. And I worked as an aerialist with them. So when I saw The Drowned Man, I saw some similarities in that work, like the proximity of the audience. But of course, it wasn't like Punch Drunk. Punch Drunk has characters who have their own tracks. La Fuera del Baos, the shows that I see, they didn't, but I know that they do shows like that as well. Yeah, but it was really exciting watching The Drowned Man.
I haven't got a chance to watch The Drowned Man before, but I know it must be a really exciting one.
Yeah, it was. It was really awesome.
Mm-hmm. And what's the difference between performing in a traditional theater and an immersive theater?
Well, the difference is like you have people everywhere. So the traditional theater, you are on stage. So you just have to perform. You have to think, or even in the round, you have to think like, that you have to protect your energy to the person that sat on the last row can understand your energy, can understand what you're saying. But in Punch Drunk, people are so close to you that you feel their energy. And it's just like, it feels like you and the audience are one at some point.
And for the Bird City, the show has been evolved a lot since the preview. And what was the process like for you from the first day of rehearsal to the current state? Where did you gain ideas from for the character development?
Oh, well, the process. First we just started developing the characters. We had the main narrative, so the main story of Agamemnon and Hecuba. You have like these two plays. And so they gave me like these three characters to start working, like the first scenes. So I start watching The Watchmen and Zagreus on my own. And they gave me the text from Yoristai Agamemnon, the play that starts with the Watchman first speech. They gave me this task to build like the first or two scenes movement-wise based on the speech of the Watchman. And then while the other performers were creating other roles, I was doing that. And at one point they came and we had a conversation and they saw what I did and they shared their opinions and their views. And then in some scenes we worked those scenes and some others we didn't. And then we started doing shows. And of course with the audience, things change a lot. We start discovering new stuff, you know, we start trying new stuff and some stuff worked and some stuff didn't. So we kept the stuff that did work. But it's been really exciting. It's just like work in progress. I'm a big fan of this film called Synetic in New York. Have you seen it?
No.
Is it Charlie or Andy Kaufman? Basically, it's a story of a director who spends like 13 years directing a show. And everything that happens in his life, he puts in the show. He has this huge warehouse. Everything is like same size. Like he builds his own street in this warehouse. But the actors are rehearsing for 13 years. Because his life is changing, so the play is changing.
A lifelong Punch Drunk production.
Yeah. And I was just like, I love that film. It's one of my favorites. And I always thought, like, would it be like to work in a show that's always developing, that something always changes? And The Burn City is that show. Like, you've seen the shows in the previews, and you've seen the show today. So much stuff changed. It's the same show, but it looks like a different show.
It's going from a baby all the way to an adult.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, also since the casts are always different each night, I mean, you get to partner with different performers for your role and their roles. And apart from choreography, would you discuss with your partners on other aspects or just go with the flow?
Well, I think we go with the flow. I mean, it's just like some stuff you just find out when you're doing it. And then if you find something, you communicate or not. But there's a point that if things are too different, we are being called in for a rehearsal and we discuss with the rehearsal director. And sometimes we do things so differently or we're in different spaces, in different scenes that the director's call is saying like, okay, guys, you have to be at least in the same space in scene one, in scene two. Yeah, so you have to spend a whole day rehearsing and going like, yeah, I do this in scene one, I do that in scene two, and then we find a way, we find the best idea. Yeah, compromise. But some stuff are so personal because we're so different. Our performing skills are so different. I mean, I think the majority of the performers here are dancers. They have a dance background. I have an acting and an aerial background. So everything that I do is informed via that background. And everything that they do is informed via the dance background. So the idea is to bring what we have that is unique to that character. So of course the character is going to be different. Like they're going to be the same character, but with small variations from
different energy from different people.
Exactly. Yeah. And different knowledges as well.
Yeah, it's also quite amazing when there's character missing and you got to do the Lonely Zagreus loop.
Oh, the legendary Lonely Zagreus loop. I really like that loop. Yeah, and that happens. You just have to improvise because when that started to happen, you don't have time to rehearse. So you go in and you have to decide what to do.
Oh, okay. So you didn't get time to rehearse for it. It's just...
Yeah, you just show up on a day and they say, well, there's no Eurydice today because COVID... Injury. So you have 5 minutes to rehearse the scene with the other in the beginning of the loop. You know, the family, we call it the family dinner, but it's like drinks celebrating Polyxena's birthday. Mm-hmm. We rehearse that as Zagreus, but the rest, everything was improvised. And I think we all do it different ways.
Yeah. Improvisation makes this show extra magical. And it also keeps you fact fresh for improvising every day.
Yeah, we're never bored. There's not a single moment of boredom because of that, and because you play with different performers all the time. There's not like a day, like 2 days in a row that I play with the same performer, or 2 days in a row that I play the same character, or even if I play the same character, the performers that I play, the Polymestres are different, and Polydoras are different. So with Zagreus, that's the case. I never did two shows with Chihiro with Stephanie Knoll or Stephanie Nightingale. It's like I do with Stephanie Knoll, and then tomorrow I'll do with Chihiro, and then in another week time I'll do with Stephanie Nightingale. And the Apollos are different as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're never bored. You're always every time you play with a different Eurydice, they have their own style. They have their own way of touching, you know. So it's always exciting, really. It's always exciting.
It's also good for the audiences.
Yeah, because I think if the performer is having fun, the audience will have fun. And I think that's the connection that I was talking about. Like in the theater in general, if you're having fun as a performer, the audience will have. But in this context of immersive theater, because the audience is so close, they almost feel what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not present, they will know that you're not present. They will feel that you're not there. But if you are present... If you're having fun, you feel the audience having fun as well.
Yeah, it's great to hear. And since, as you mentioned, you have acrobatic background, how do you adapt some of the movement into the show?
Well, I try to do stuff, but sometimes stuff are very dangerous. I can do that dangerous things. I don't find it really dangerous. But I think it's health and safety wise, and because... The space is not built to be a circus venue.
Yeah.
I am told off a lot. Like, Milton, you can't do that. And I'm like, but it looks so cool. Like, no, you can't. So you try to do stuff and try to be as safe as possible for yourself. And there's some rules that you have to obey. And you try to obey those rules and still pushing a bit. But there's not a lot of acrobatic stuff that I do in the show. It's just, it's just like that lift that Zagreus does. And that bit of Kronos as well. With the Watchmen, they don't let me go upside down in the ladder. Yeah, I tried a lot and they're fed up of telling me not to. So I have to stop that.
How did you take the initiative with your upper limb difference to the show from the acting aspect? like for example, Kronos and Tor's part and the Watchmen's very touching part.
Those were my ideas. Yeah, because I'm an advocate. I'm an ambassador for disability representation in the arts. I work with a company called Triple C. And my mission and our mission is to say, like, we're here. And there's like 20% of us in the whole world. That's 20% of people are disabled. And that number will increase because as we are growing older and living longer. So having that in your mind, everything that I do, I try to first not to hide. And second, to use it for my characters and to say this character is disabled, but it's disabled in the way that I show to portray, not the way that the world used to see disability, like people who don't have agency of their own body, or people who suffer a lot, you know? So the Watchmen, for example, the idea of using that disability was because back in the days, people who were Watchmen, like they couldn't fight. So they were older people, or the people that were injured or disabled people. So I really want to make sure that that was in my characters. So I asked the artists if I could do that. Actually, I asked them to see it. It's like, I have this idea, see if it works. And they really liked that idea. And the Kronos one was, I saw that pair of tools there. And I was just like, I wonder if I, like, if he used this to self-harm himself. And then I use it and I put it next to my hand that doesn't have fingers. And I was like, oh, this creates a really cool image. But that image can be used by someone who has fingers as well and pretend to cut his fingers, you know, so it does work. But for me, the important thing was to show, not to hide my disability, but to say, this is what I do. This is what I do in all my life. It's just like, look at me. I am disabled, but I can do all these stuff. I can act. I can do aerial circus. I can play the guitar, particularly when I have like a big follow on Instagram of parents who have children who have the same condition, which is called cerebrochidactyly, and they don't know, and they're afraid that their kids are going to be bullied or afraid that the kids are going to have the same opportunities. So I just use that as a mission to say, like, oh, look at me. I'm a grown-up man, and I'm following my dreams, so you're going to be okay. And by doing that in my job, in other plays, I've met so many people who are, like, who can't even bring their kid children without, that don't have fingers to see me. And I take time to talk to them in the end, and they ask me questions, and they tell me about their lives, and they share their concerns, and I talk about what happened to me, my struggles, my fights. So yeah, so that's a choice that I do. It wasn't asked by the directors or anything at all. Just, I do hope that they hire me because of what I give as a performer. They know that I have a disability, and they never asked me to use it in whatsoever. They just asked me to use my artistry. That was it. So when I came with these ideas, they'd be like, oh, the Watchmen one, they'd be like, oh my gosh, that's so heartbreaking. And the Kronos one was a kind of a surprise. One of them saw it, like Kath Duggan saw it, and she was like, oh, that's so thrilling. That's so cool. Let's keep that. So yeah, so this is how I use. And Zagreus, because Zagreus, I don't think there's any reason to use disability because it's my third character. He's just like a heartthrob, a cheeky, like matinee. That's why I describe it, like kind of a heartthrob from the 30s who was in love with Eurydice. And so, and he can have a disability as well. Why not? I don't shine my hand into Grace. I decide not to because there's nothing to tell. There's no story to tell with my disability in that character. So you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate what you did to all your characters. They are all amazing. The last question, what's the most unforgettable moment for you in the show?
The most unforgettable moment?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's so many. What would you mean, like for the whole show, that what I saw or what I experienced?
Anything.
I think the unforgettable moments that I experienced is, there's loads of them, is when we're doing the previews, because we're building our own tracks and then we have to start doing the previews, and all of a sudden we cross characters that we never crossed before and we have to improvise. Remember the first previews were so full on for 3 hours. I just met these characters and I have to do something with them or I have to ignore them. And some of them, they would just like come at me and kiss me or lick my face or slap me. Particularly like the veterans, as a joke, of course, the punch drunk veterans who are used to do these kind of shows. So those moments, they were really hard for me not to corpse. So I had to hide my face and bite my hand not to laugh. And some of the inner jokes that we do to each other when we are acting and the audience, they can't see, that those are really unforgettable. I think the first time I played Zagreus as solo as well was really unforgettable because I was so nervous. I was like, and I had to improvise in the minutes, in the moment, with like, what am I going to do in this scene? There's so many, but yeah, but those would be the moments. Yeah.
Really amazing memory. Thank you very much.
Thank you, no worries.